Cincinnati.
Hello and welcome to episode 254 of Cincinnati, the Bengals UK podcast. My name is Paul Hirons, and wouldn't you just know it, another NFL draft is in the books. And what a weekend it was in Detroit. And I feel like I should speak German because there was seemed to be a lot of German fans giving their teams picks, which is obviously absolutely fine. There was a real international flavour, I thought, to some of the day two and three picks, which shows you how big the game has grown. But I like to think that, you know, we were there pretty much at the very start of things, weren't we? Nathan Palmer!
I was going to say, how are you in German there, to try and keep on theme, but I actually forgot what... Auf geht's, Paul. There we go.
Auf geht's, yeah, good, night, but... good, yeah. That's all I know, really, in German.
Yeah, another draft in the books. What are you feeling about it? Are you sad now the draft's over? Because I always feel like once the draft finishes, there's not much left, is there? You kind of, in your mind, you're thinking, oh, you know, now the free agency in the draft, they're always fun activities for different reasons. And it's a bit of a long stare into the abyss now, isn't it, until we get to the preseason and training camp.
Well, we've got a rookie mini camp this week, and then we've got some OTAs, and then... I think the month of June is a bit tumbleweed, isn't it? Let's face it. So there's a few bits and pieces coming up, and so that's really cool. But yeah, you're right. It is now the excitement of free agency is kind of over pretty much. The draft and all the build-up, because the build-up goes nuts, doesn't it? Let's face it, there are more mock drafts. And, you know, we'd like to take part in all this as well, because why not? There is the chance of... getting really deeply into the next generation of players, and then we get to guess who the Bengals might pick, which is always fun. But as long as you kind of know that it's fun, do you know what I mean? Don't take it too seriously, because let's face it, we don't know what the Bengals big board is going to be. We can just guess as much as we like. But I tell you one thing, Nathan, when we did our mock draft, we were relatively successful, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, there would have, you know, certainly if we got some of those prospects or some sort of good value players in there in terms of what we were looking at on ours. So, you know, if Duke Toby wants to have a word with us next year, we're always available, aren't we, Sam?
We're always available, to be honest with you. Now, I am sitting in a hotel room in London, and you are also in another part of London, so we'll see how this goes tonight. I think the hotel Wi-Fi is strong enough to sort this out, but do bear with us if things go spectacularly wrong. They shouldn't really, but anyway, yes, how am I feeling about the draft? In terms of the Bengals, I still am undecided. I keep going, yep, that's great, that's fun, there's a lot of risky swing for the fences picks in this draft, and that's very unusual for the Bengals. They like to go a bit safe and unspectacular, and then a part of me thinks there was some for that very reason as well, it's a bit risky. And also, I'm surprised at a few bits and pieces in it, and I'm not sure I'm down with a few bits and pieces with it. But we'll get into that, Nathan. What's your snap initial takeaway from this draft class?
I think you summed it up perfectly there. I pivot back and forward on what I think with that. There's some good players in there. There's some high ceilings in there. There's needs filled, which is always important, I think, when you go into a draft. And the Bengals very, very much left themselves a bit open in terms of what they needed on the roster. I think a lot of people knew the direction they were going to go in the first and second rounds, or certainly in the first three rounds, in terms of the offensive and defensive line. And I think, to be honest with you, that's kind of pushed him into a bit of a corner in terms of best player available. Perhaps not necessarily in rounds one and two, but perhaps later in the draft for the defensive tackles and, you know, needing to sort of go there where perhaps it wasn't necessarily a best player available situation. But it's really hard, isn't it, to say for any team we've had a shocker, barring the Falcons. I think consensus people are very unhappy about Michael Penix being drafted at eight. It's a solid draft with some very well-received players, some very liked players. There's a lot of, I mean, like, it's like you said, now someone else was saying on Twitter earlier, it's like every team gets better in the draft. Every player has got an enormous upside that's been written up about them. There's some great highlight reels out there. You're excited about your picks. There's no picks out there that the Bengals have made that everyone is sitting there saying, look, I really don't like this. It's a horrible pick. So for the best part, you've got to get behind the lads and hope that the Bengals have made some solid choices there. And yeah, I don't hate it. But it's also not one of those where you're like, oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, you're absolutely right. First and foremost, I mean, we get behind these lads. We want to see these lads.
Yeah, exactly.
Succeed. We want Josh Newton to become our new favourite player. We want Cedric Johnson down there in the sixth round to make the roster and start making plays. Do you know what I mean? We want these guys to succeed. But equally, I think, you know, everyone does fall into the trap, don't they? They've got their own favourite guys. So if the Bengals don't draft them, then automatically it's a bad draft, you know. And I think someone, our friend Casey Lynn, kind of said it very well. It's like, you know, a lot of people treat the draft like the endings of their favourite TV show. You know, if it doesn't quite match up with what they want, then there's hell to pay, basically. Do you know what I mean? But, you know, I don't know. With all that being said, should we? Because you're right, it's impossible to evaluate this straight away, really. I mean, what you want to do is evaluate sort of three, 4 years down the line. But we're not going to do that. We're going to fall into the trap again of having a little look. We'll just go through, really, and see what we think of these picks. So let's start at the top, shall we? Amarius Mims, the tackle, enormous 6'8" tackle from Georgia. Now, I think when we were speaking about tackles, we sort of went for J.C. Latham. He went very early to the Titans, didn't he? So, and Fashanu went, and obviously Joe Alt went. Fortanu was still on the board. There were some cornerbacks, really good starting caliber cornerbacks on the board. Johnny Newton was there. Byron Murphy had gone. So I guess it wasn't too much of a surprise. I don't think this was a reach. But again, the risk factor is there with Amarius Mims. He looks like $1 million physically. Incredible specimen. 6'8", as athletic as you like. He's only played 8 games in 3 years. So there's question marks. There are question marks. But I guess the beauty of this pick is that he's got all the upside in the world. His ceiling is all pro, basically. That's his ceiling. So if we get, you know, anywhere near that, then they will have struck a home run, I think, with Amarius Mims. But of course, what if the NFL is too much for him? What if the constant grind of the NFL going up against TJ Watt and Myles Garrett week in, week out is just too much for him? That's the risk here. You just do not know. But he seemed like a really good kid. You get behind him. And hopefully we've got our right tackle of the future and potentially the best right tackle since Willie Anderson. How about that for a statement? You know, that's what it'll be if he gets to anywhere near his ceiling.
Yeah, I think there's two sides to this, isn't there? There's the outrageous athleticism and prototypical tackle side of him. And as you said, the ceiling, he really is all pro level. There's a lot to like about him. I think if he played some more snaps and he played... you know, but started a few more games. A lot of people are out there saying that he would have been an almost certain top 10 pick in a very talented tackle class. It gives you a feel of how good he is. I think in other draft classes, he would have probably gone even earlier than he did going to us at 18. So there's definitely some, you know, some things to like about him. He played at Georgia. He's a winner. You know, he's a very exciting prospect if things are to go well. We obviously got a position of need on that O-line and some very, very well-received depth. He can be used in the jumbo packages potentially next year. And obviously, if there are any injuries on the line, he'll have to play some games. But the worry for me, as everyone has outlined, is injury history and lack of experience. And that's a problem, isn't it? You know, there's nothing worse than you draft a player. We've seen it in the past, you know, first round picks that we've brought in, get injured year one, struggle to contribute year two. And all of a sudden, you know, you start to just get behind the eight ball a little bit in terms of what they're able to do. I mean, this is a guy that pulled his hamstring in the 40-yard dash. He's had a couple of knocks in the past. And just when you're, he's all well and good being freakishly athletic at 6'8 and 360-odd pounds. But that, you can imagine the, you know, the absolute sort of damage that's going to do to your knees and the pressure and the stresses of maintaining a body of that size. Trent Brown's similar, you know, that's the problem with him. Yes, he's 6'8". Yes, he's an absolute man mountain. But injury history, can he finish the season? And that's the problem with Mims, is not only do you need him to be good enough that he can go out there and play at a high level, but you need him to be able to finish seasons and you know, play deep into the playoffs. The seasons are only getting longer at the moment. It's a very physical game, obviously, and that is perhaps the one knock that he was, the one knock you definitely would have in terms of can he keep going. Because you look back to our Super Bowl run, the one thing that stood out for me and still stands out for me that not many people talk about, we were a bit lucky that year with injuries. There wasn't anything massively notable. We had a fairly healthy team throughout the playoffs and late on in the season, and that's where it really can make a difference. So you just got to cross your fingers and hope for the best with this guy, because I think if he can play anywhere near his potential, we're very lucky. The one thing, last thing I'm going to say on this is, the Bengals love a project on the offensive line. They typically, even without the offensive line, quite like a guy with these great attributes that they feel they can mold. Frank Pollock will be sitting there salivating, saying, look, I'm going to, you know, turn this guy into a Willie Anderson type of player. But again, you don't know, that slightly makes me nervous considering the success we've had in the past, some of these linemen that we've gone and drafted. So let's see. But I, like you said earlier, Son, and I've been waffling on for a while now, there wasn't really an obvious better option there. Jared Verse, Faltanu, Terry and Arnold, yeah, not too bad. I think if we'd taken them, people would have been a bit like, meh. Mims, I think, in there was a fairly good choice. You've got to be fairly happy with that.
I think the argument that Andrew Dockrell made on Good Morning Bengals, our daily post-draft recap show, so thanks to everyone who tuned into that, made the point that, you know, if we'd have drafted a Terry Arnold, for instance, he would have probably been our starting cornerback, so you would have got an impact from him straight away.
Yeah.
Whereas Mims was kind of perhaps OT5 on the board, the fifth best offensive tackle. He's not going to make a huge impact straight away. Oh, and I get that. I think that's a fair argument. But equally, I think he's going to see some action this year because Trent Brown has not finished a season in the past couple of years. So, as you say, it's a 17-game season now. Mims is going to see some action, so it'll be really, really interesting to see. Right, let's get on to the second round because we're going to be here all night if we hang around. Chris Jenkins, defensive tackle, was taken in the second round from Michigan. I think everyone was pretty happy about that. I was one of my guys. We mock draft him. I think it's pretty decent value there, the consensus is, and it also meets a need as well. So, and I mean, just look at his personality. I'm sure everyone out there has seen his kind of press conferences, seen his mutant what's it called, the Turkish, I don't know, lift or something, where he holds a dumbbell up aloft and kind of gets up from a lying position all in one relatively fluid movement while holding this dumbbell aloft. And obviously Mo Egger did something with a pint of beer. Did it quite well, actually. So Mo the Mutant, as he should be named from now on. But Chris Jenkins, his personality looks infectious. He's the kind of guy that could be the next big leader in the locker room. You think he's got a really infectious personality.
You definitely see that with Zach Taylor drafts now, don't you? Is that focus on personalities, team captains? We said that last week before they went into the draft, and straight away there's some other guys on there that have been multiple year captains. So, I think Chris Jenkins fit was great, and I think obviously Duke's seen our mock draft and seen that we were comfortable with him there, and I think that's obviously played a big part in the final pick.
Yeah, absolutely. You talk about personalities though, and then we get into the third round, Nathan, and the big surprise here. Wide receiver Jermaine Burton from Alabama, previously of Georgia. I didn't even go near him in the mocks because of his red flags and his emotional maturity, shall we say, issues. He's another guy that hit a woman. There's no other way to get around it. He hit someone, hit a woman, I think, as she and lots of others, to be fair, stormed the field during a game. I'm not quite sure of the details of that, so I'll leave it there because I need to kind of read up on that. It doesn't enamour you to him straight away, I have to say, Jermaine Burton. You hear that he was transferred all over the place in high school. But then, you know, you look at the clips of him on video and he looks like a first-round talent. So again, you've got the ceiling that is a first-round talent, and you know it could be another Joe Mixon scenario all over again, where no one else was willing to give him a shot, but we do. And let's hope he has the career of Joe Mixon, or at least what Joe Mixon had with the Bengals, and also the penny drops. Because my big fear with Jermaine Burton is that he'll rack up the numbers and it'll look like $1 million, but in the big crucial moments, in big crucial games, he'll do a Pac-Man, he'll do a perfect, do you know what I mean? He'll get, you know, commit an egregious penalty, you know, when the chips are down. That's my big worry with Jermaine Burton. I hope being drafted makes the penny drop for him. I hope being around the likes of T. Higgins and Jamar Chase and Troy Walters and crucially Joe Burrow, who doesn't stand for any shit. Let's just say that right now. He will not stand for any shit in that locker room. I hope the penny drops for him and he has a spectacular career. But that is my worry with Burton. I stayed away from him because of all the red flags in the mock drafts, for whatever that is worth. But they've seen something. They've done all their due diligence. They've interviewed all the people that need to be interviewed when it comes to Burton. They obviously like him as a personality. And I say, he looks like $1 million on the video clips. Do you know what I mean? He looks fantastic. But yeah, that's my big worry, that deep down there, however much, you know, you coach him and, you know, he looks great. When the chips are down and it's an emotional situation in a big game, what's he going to do? Now, yeah, that's my big worry with him.
No, I think you're bang on. I think you also made a really good point about, I've got that in my notes here, just around, look, like if there's ever going to be a situation, you bring a guy into a team to try and mature him, to try and get the best out of his personality, it definitely is with Joe Burrow, Jamar Chase, T. Higgins, great locker room. Now, we don't know how long T is going to be around for, but there's high character guys in that locker room, even people like Trent Irwin, you know, very hardworking player that he's going to have to go up against as well to earn his reps. The thing I like about Jermaine Burton is his speed. I think that's the biggest thing that we need, is that deep play threat. I think the Bengals, as good as that wide receiver core was, or has been, with Tyler Boyd, Higgins and Chase, I think it perhaps lacks that sort of elite level speed down the field to really sort of worry defenses. And I think if you look at all of his stats in terms of yards per reception and things like that, it's very, very positive. So I like the fact that we've got a bit of a wild card from that. You'd like to think that TJ Hushmanzada, obviously training him, is in the Bengals' ear, only with their best interests at heart. Obviously, the character concerns, you know, you talked on that. I'm not going to go any further on that. But I think we needed a wide receiver. And like you said, we said this at the start, the high ceiling seems to really have been where the Bengals have tried to go to here. And let's be honest, there's going to be a couple of these guys that we've talked about with high ceilings that are not going to pan out. Every year we go through the, you know, the draft and we say, oh, what if this, what if that? The reality is there's normally from any draft class, 2, 3, maybe 4, if you're lucky, players that are going to contribute. And if the Bengals are taking gambles, they might come out of this with one Pro Bowl player, one very high quality starter, one rotational player, and then people like Jermaine Burton might just bust, might not work out, might not put the effort in. You never know. So, yeah, we'll see how things go. I mean, Tyler Boyd for us, he had character concerns. Marvin Lewis sort of wasn't a big fan of him to begin with. We were thinking he might not turn out to be too much, and he managed to turn it around after sort of year two, three, and ended up being an incredible player for us. So, yeah, there's hope there, and, you know, I think it's an interesting pick.
Another one, a second third-round pick was McKinley Jackson, another defensive tackle, from this time from Texas A&M. More of a bigger body, more of a run stuffer, I guess, more of a space eater. This was a very contentious pick. Now, I had my eye on McKinley Jackson, I must say, and on all the big boards that I used for all my mock drafts, again, for whatever that is worth, he was down in this sort of area, McKinley Jackson. I had my eye on him, and I liked the look of him. But you look at, say, Dane Brugler, who compiles that very impressive beast for The Athletic. He had him down in as a sort of 6th, 7th round grade. I think Lance Zierlein had, of NFL.com, had him as a 5th round grade. The evaluation of McKinley Jackson was all over the place, I must say. I actually don't mind this pick, but if you speak to someone like Joe Goodberry, he's spitting mad about this pick, because you do not use a top 100 pick, this extra gifted compensatory pick in the top 100. You do not use him on a nose tackle. You do not. It's just not a position of value. And yet, I'm okay with it because we desperately needed one. And I'm not saying that McKinley Jackson is going to be the next DJ Reader, because he's patently not many people can, but it's what we needed, you know. If, say, Chris Jenkins is a BJ Hill do it all sort of defensive tackle, a bit of pass rush, decent run stopper, etc., etc., then McKinley Jackson is closer to DJ Reader, I suppose. But yeah, so that's why I was higher on this pick than a lot of others. The draft nerds think, you know, this is a really bad value pick, and because his evaluation is all over the charts, some have got him 3rd round, or some of the big draft evaluators have got him right down there in the 6th and 7th. Consensus was that we reached a little bit, you know, we needed this, and in that round, in the Bengals' defense, I guess, we saw all manner of defensive tackles go. And I think they just got nervous. They just kind of thought, if we don't get our guy here, there is not going to be any other options for us. So I don't blame them. You could argue that it was a bit of a reach, perhaps. I understand Joe Goodberry's argument that, you know, ideally you're not spending a top 100 pick on a nose tackle. But we needed it. And yeah, I'm okay with it. I'm okay with this pick.
Do you know what's funny is they wanted, from a lot of people out there reading, you know, notes from around the league, they really wanted Tavondre Sweat, who we obviously did in our mock draft, another sort of big defensive tackle, but he went a bit earlier than I think they would have liked. But I think that was the guy they were really sort of focused in on. But yeah, it is a reach, isn't it? And I think this is where the Bengals and a few people, I think Paul Dana was saying this, their lack of addressing the defensive tackle position really in free agency left them open to having to sort of double dip quite quickly and pick, you know, one nose tackle in round three and then another defensive tackle in round two. And like you said, I think they were worried if McKinley Jackson, they didn't pull the trigger then and then wait until, you know, round four and he's not there, then all of a sudden it's really looking a bit bleak there. So, I mean, he's a big guy, he'll fill a need for us. It is a reach. Another high character guy, a captain, which is ideal. Yeah, I think you summed up very well. Smash that like, feel the rhythm. Pump it up, make the subs rise. Subs hype. Everybody hit like when we turn the cast up. Right, in the fourth round, once the fourth round, we selected the tight end from Iowa, Eric Orr, or as I like to call him, Eric Fuck Orr.
Now, another contentious pick. Eric Hall, on every big board that I was using, he was down in the sixth, seventh round, perhaps. He met with the Bengals throughout the whole process, so it's obvious that they liked him. He's got a bad spine, and he's recovering from an ACL. So
it's not really what you want to hear, is it? He's got a bad spine.
He's not really. That's a bit unfair. His spine. He had a bad spinal injury, but that's recovered. He's recovered and that's healed now. But now he did his ACL in last year. So, by all accounts, it's a risky pick. I think it's weirdly a bit of a reach. There was some interior offensive linemen that were looking good around this sort of area. Yeah, I don't know. Again, seems like a good kid. If he hits the ceiling, he's going to be a really good player by the looks of it. He's quite athletic. He's a pass catcher, but he can do some blocking as well. You're inline tight end. So, I mean, again, solid if it works out. Again, it's a really risky pick. Yeah, I don't know, man. It's a bit of a funny one.
Yeah, I mean, like another guy, captain, visited the Bengals, obviously liked what they saw from him. It is, I mean, like I said, when you're talking about a guy that's got a spine injury, then's coming off an ACL, hasn't finished the last two seasons, his output isn't exactly spectacular either in terms of, like, you know, yards and everything else. I mean, it's a project, isn't it? But again, a fourth round pick, middle of the fourth round, it felt a bit early for someone like him. And I think that the pick for him, if you just look at it in isolation, it's like, okay, yeah, might have been a reach. We do need a bit of tight end depth. They haven't got much in the locker tight end wise moving forward, you know, after Mike Gesicki's out of contract in a year's time. So you do need the tight ends. But I think when you then jump on to the Tanner McLaughlin pick a couple of rounds later and you're double dipping, that's where the Eric Hall pick looks slightly more questionable. If it, in isolation, maybe, you know, you need a position. You need a player at the position there, but I think double dipping makes that pick look even, you know, perhaps not as good value when you've had to go for two tight ends in the latter round.
Yeah, so. Let's talk about they select Josh Newton in the fifth round, a cornerback from TCU. We didn't go cornerback early. Perhaps the board just didn't fall for them in terms of cornerback, which is fine. We'll get on to Josh Newton in a minute, but round six. And this is the area where you kind of thought, right, okay, we're going to maybe package some, you know, lower picks, you know, in the sixth and seventh round to move up a little bit to get a few guys, you know. Yeah, okay, come on then. Are we really going to stick and pick all the way through? Are we really going to pick 10 players? And like as the rounds ticked by, it was kind of like, yes, we are. We obviously are. Round six, they double dipped at tight end, which really surprised me, I have to say. Tanner McLaughlin, I haven't got anything against the player. Our Andrew Docker mocked him a couple of times. He looks a good prospect. I would have preferred just to have taken him. The consensus out there seems to suggest that McLaughlin should have gone in the fourth round and Eric Hall in the sixth. So they're like playing all the right notes, but not necessarily in the right orders. Old pals Morecambe and Wise used to say, I'm not sure about double dipping at tight end. You know, it's I get it. The room is now stocked. It's really interesting.
But who's not going to make the roster? Because Gesicki's on the roster.
Gesicki and Sample are going to be there.
But Eric Hall will be there. They're not going to cut a guy they've picked in the fourth round.
Oh, yeah. And what about Tanner McLaughlin here? Is Tanner Hudson under threat here?
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah, that's exactly right. Because there's no way they're going to take five tight ends. You've got McLaughlin, Eric Hall, Hudson, Sample, and Gesicki. I mean, Tanner McLaughlin could very easily find his way onto the practice squad. But again, in that, you know, do you really want to be sort of saying for a guy that you've taken the sixth round, you're putting him straight on the practice squad? Could be very easy for a team that needed a bit of a project at tight end to say, yep, actually we want, we might go and, you know, take him off your hands, especially if this is a guy that a few teams might have had on their draft board in the fourth, fifth round, like you were saying, son. So they might see that as excellent value to stock there. So it's a bit of a worry in terms of, I mean, Tanner Hudson's the guy I think probably is going to be a bit worried.
Yeah. I think you hit on the nail on the head, and I was going to wait till the end of our little recap to mention this, but I'll mention it now. I'm not sure where some of these guys are going to fit on the roster, and it just feels like picking them for the sake of it, you know. And we really should have packaged things up a bit and moved up.
Oh, yeah, I couldn't agree more with that.
Yeah, we should have gone for quality over quantity. And it feels like, with absolutely all due respect, because, again, I want these guys to succeed, but just judging objectively, feels a bit like quantity over quality. Now, I want these guys to go out and prove me wrong. What a dickhead I am, you know what I mean? I want them to do that. But I just fear for that, you know, are all these guys going to make the roster? I'm not sure.
Yeah, and there was talk around that apparently the Bengals were looking to try and move up in the second round, possibly to go and get Johnny Newton when he didn't sort of made it out of the first round. I think it was a bit too steep for them in terms of going up. But I think that's one opportunity where I think Bengals fans would be frothing at the mouth and absolutely loving it if we had been aggressive. And maybe we'd say, look, do you know what? We're going to give up, you know, a couple of picks in this draft. And do you know what? We're going to give up a second round pick in next year's draft. Something they've done before. But actually, you come out of the first two rounds and you got Amarius Mims, very good project on the offensive line. You got Johnny Newton on the defensive line. All of a sudden, the upgrade on both those positions is enormous. Now, don't get me wrong, Chris Jenkins is also a great player there, but I think we all know that Johnny Newton would have been a much more premium selection there. And it's like you said, is it quantity over quality? Or, you know, that's the debate that always comes up, but it's just never an option the Bengals really seem to consider. And if you look around the league, like consensus wise, everyone was saying the Philadelphia Eagles had one of the best drafts out there. They moved around about 6, 7, 8 times, quite creative in how they were doing things. And you know, I don't think the Bengals should be too afraid to be a bit more aggressive in that regard and not always constantly looking to have to get, you know, a fantastic deal. Sometimes, you know, out of necessity, you might have to take a, you know, one step back to take two forward.
Right, let's rattle through these. Josh Newton, cornerback from TCU in the 5th round. The big news, however, no, that's fair enough. And actually, even though he doesn't sort of measure well athletically, he looks like a real sort of ball hawk. He knows where the ball is, if that makes sense. He knows how to make plays and has made a lot of plays. And I've seen a lot of people kind of say this could be the steal of, like, you know, whatever. You know, people come out with these things. But he looks like a bit of an interesting player. The other interesting news that came out over the weekend was that Zach Taylor said that Dax Hill is moving to the cornerback room. Hill is going to be a cornerback. Now, presumably, he's going to be an outside. He's going to be competing for a job on the outside. But, you know, he is a slot corner, really. So I feel sorry for Dax, really. I have to say, he's such a nice kid. And he came out in the locker room interview saying, yeah, whatever, I'll do whatever. I'll be like, yep, if they want me to play cornerback, let's go. Let's give it a go. You know, so what a great attitude. I feel a bit bad for him because he's been shunted around a little bit. Whereas actually, why not play him where he excelled at Michigan, you know, in the slot? But let's see how he got on. But so, yeah, you know, a little bit of depth at cornerback is welcome. I think Josh Newton is sort of cornerback 4, 5, something like that. But we'll see. Right, into the second pick for the 6th round, Cedric Johnson, an edge rusher from Ole Miss. And he's supposed to be very athletic. So I'm looking forward to seeing what he gets up to, what he can show. Into the 7th, Dejan Anthony from Ole Miss, a safety. Again, we'll see how he works out. And the final pick of the draft class, Matt Lee, the centre from Miami. And I do like this pick. Good value, meets a need. We didn't go interior offensive line throughout the whole draft, which was a bit of a surprise. But Matt Lee, again, our Dockers mocked him a few times. He could be Ted Karras' heir apparent, you know. Certainly, I think he's got a chance of beating out Trey Hill, I think. So, yeah, a really good, strong final pick, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. A bit more depth. I mean, once you get down into the sort of latter rounds, you've just got to hope that some of these guys have got the work ethic and they're going to really sort of come into camp and blow things away and force their way onto the roster. I think with the 10 picks, people like Dejan Anthony, Cedric Johnson, they've got, I wouldn't say an uphill battle, but they're going to really be in a fight to, you know, they're by no means a guarantee when you just got 7 picks that you ideally want all of them on the roster. So they're going to really have to fight for their lives down there. But you know, maybe the Bengals are incentivizing that. You know, maybe they really want these camp battles to be feisty. A guy like Matt Lee genuinely might have one of the best chances because I'm not, you know, no knocks really to some of the guys currently on the roster, but the backup you know, on the interior, and at the tackle position, really, he's not fantastic. You know, if he was to have a great camp, Matt Lee, I think we, you know, I'd love to see a bit more from what he can do. So, yeah, I think at the end of the day as well, on that offensive line, you look going forward, people like Ted Karras are out of contract next year. You know, that there's not much longevity there. So we do really need to start planning for the future there. So he's a guy I think, you know, I can't say I know an enormous amount about his talent, but there's an opportunity there certainly for guys on the O-line to really carve out space for themselves.
We've also got a bunch of undrafted free agents that'll get going this week. Let's go through them real quick. Punter Austin McNamara, wide receiver Cole Burgess, who is quite rated, actually. So that, he's one to watch out for, I think. Safety Michael Dowell, linebacker Aaron Casey, defensive end Justin Blazek, quarterback Rocky Lombardi, linebacker Maima Jongmeta, halfback or running back Elijah Collins, safety PJ Jules, wide receiver Sam Wigluj, offensive tackle Eric Miller, safety Lance Robinson Jr., tight end Cam Grandy, wide receiver Trey Mosley, and I think there's one or two more. Let's have a look.
I just want to say I'm a Northern Illinois fan. They're my college team. Rocky Lombardi's was our quarterback, so I know quite a bit about him.
Okay, very good. Well, what are you saying then?
He's an incredible guy in the locker room, like 10 out of 10, real leader. He transferred over from Michigan State. He's not going to unseat Joe Burrow, I can tell you that. But he'll do anything you ask him to do. I wouldn't be surprised if they tried to almost transfer him to another position or right, something. Right. But he's a very high IQ, high work ethic, very, very good in that sense.
Elijah Kane, running back from LSU. So they'll all be battling away there. Good luck to all of them. We do love an undrafted free agent. We'd love all our... I know I was a bit down on various things, but you know, speak for you as well, Nathan. Want all of these guys to succeed. We wish them absolutely all the best. So it's going to be fun seeing what happens to them, guys. I am going to give, if I was to grade it, I am going to give it a C+, though.
I'm going to give it. I've stuck between a B- and a C+. I want to probably give it a C+ as well. Well, I don't know. Yeah, C+. I've been a bit harsh. I think you got some really good players. I think Chris Jenkins is great. I think Mims was probably about as good as we could have got with no one dropping down. Some of the picks in the sort of third, fourth, fifth round, I wasn't madly keen on. I'm going to give it a C+ for you, son. Yeah.
I mean, so it's solid, and goodness me, if we come back in a year or two's time and Mims fulfills all his potential, right, or at least some of his potential, actually, to be fair, if McKinley Jackson slots in to be a decent player, if suddenly we're looking at a tight end room of Tanner McLachlan and Eric Hall as the two starters, and they're having a good time, Josh Norman's making plays, then you're going to turn it into an A, right, basically, overnight. And if Jermaine Burton is suddenly T. Higgins' heir apparent and is like 600, 700, 800, nudging 1,000 yards a year, then, you know, it's going to turn into an A+, really. Right. But there's a lot of variables knocking about here.
So, do you not just think, just one super quick thing here that might send you off your rocker a little bit, but do you not just think if they'd re-signed DJ Reader, given him some cash, it really would have opened that draft up a bit? Because then you don't need to be going for McKinley Jackson at the end of the third round there. It just gives you a little bit more flexibility to go best player available. It also means almost certainly that you do not need to make 10 of those picks because DJ Reader is going to be on the roster.
100%.
I just think that's a real mistake from the Bengals, and not to harp on about Andrew Whitworth, but really, you know, high character, one of the best players on the roster, letting him leave, not even for big bucks, really, to Detroit. I think that's one of the biggest mistakes they'll look back on and say, shit.
I agree. Yeah. But equally, it's done now, Nathan. So,
yeah, no,
you know,
I agree.
As you said, they did paint themselves into a corner a little bit and they had to do something. That's why I'm not going to crush the McKinley Jackson pick, because I liked him. He was one of my guys in the draft, so I'm super pleased and a little bit smug that they took him. But equally, I can see why they took him, because they didn't really have a choice, you know. But yeah, you're right. If they'd have re-signed DJ Reader, that would have opened the draft up, you know, fantastically for them, you know. But anyway, one thing that we haven't spoken about, and we should do very quickly, is the Trey Hendrickson situation, because that kicked off like out of the blue, although apparently it wasn't out of the blue. Apparently it's been simmering in the background for a little while now. He came out and put in a trade request the day before the draft. Is he having a laugh? What's he doing, the twat?
Yeah, I mean, it's just agent play, isn't it? And again, a bit like T. Higgins' agent doing it the day before free agency. The consensus here is get your name in the headlines. You know, could he be traded in the draft? They get a few teams talking around the league. You know, did the Bengals get any phone calls potentially looking to try and take the Trey Hendrickson off the Bengals in exchange for picks? You never know. But I'm not worried about it. Zach Taylor's very confidently buffed it away and said, look, I don't think this is an issue. I love Trey. He loves playing here. I think that, I mean, we gave Trey extra money about a year or two ago. I know his deal right now is not potentially comparable with players that are playing at his level, and I can understand the frustration from his side with that. The only thing that the Bengals are just in a bit of danger of doing is opening the door to a bit of sort of heavy press on them, that they're not giving people enough guaranteed money and they can't match up with some of these modern day contracts. And that's,
well, they're not, that's the thing.
This is the thing, isn't it? You've got someone like T. Higgins saying it, you've got Trey Hendrickson saying it, it's garnering national press because they're two of our best players. Long term there, it just starts to get a bit twitchy for other players in free agency, or, you know, players that get drafted to this team that are looking for big second contracts. Can the Bengals actually do that? Can they really, you know, match up with the big, you know, some teams like the LA Rams and people like that that have got big budgets, the Broncos, etc. I just am slightly concerned about that narrative long term and how the Bengals are able to navigate that, because they don't have the same level of financial backing and funds as people like Denver and the, you know, the New York franchises, the LA franchises, etc., the Bucks with Kroenke, etc. So it just potentially starts to make you twitch a bit, doesn't it? But I think Trey will play. I don't think there's any chance he's traded. Same with T. Higgins. But you're not going to, you can't rely on that forever.
No, I mean, it's one of them, isn't it? I think you do not begrudge actually Trey having a bit of a word and saying, hold on a minute, you know, you look at where I am in terms of production and who I'm up against, you know, almost on a par with, i.e. your Myles Garrett's, your whoever's, and you look what I'm paid and it's nowhere near what they're getting. You know, we were talking like $10 million away, a $10 million discrepancy. And on the other flip side, you're thinking, well, why did you sign a new deal 9 months ago with the money that you did and not kick up a stink then?
Yeah.
And then come out and say, I'm in the perfect place with the perfect organisation, with the perfect people and the perfect front office, and I love it and blah, blah, blah. You know, it's kind of like, come on, man. So it's a tricky one, because you can understand both sides of the argument, really. But it just came out of the blue, because I think everybody loves Trey and he has done a remarkable job. He's arguably the best free agent signing that the Bengals have ever made. I would put that in there. So I wonder whether they can hash out a bit of a deal. By the sounds of it, it was a bit like, I want more security, I want a longer term deal. But the Bengals, you know, he's 30, 31. I think, I don't know, maybe he saw the contract that Danielle Hunter got from the Houston Texans in the offseason, and thought, hold on a minute, I'm producing as much as he is and he's getting a whopper of a contract, similar age to me, what the hell's going on? I don't know, we'll see what happens. I hope he's around. I mean, he did sign an extension for a year, so will he honour that? I don't know. I've got the feeling there might be a bit of drama in training camp this year. Might be a couple of holdouts, Nathan. We've not had that for a while, have we?
I don't think there will be, to be honest with you. I think there'll be a, you know, they're probably not going to be the first people there at training camp, and, you know, they potentially won't want to throw themselves at pre-season. I mean, it's the same boat for, I mean, Trey Hendrickson is a guy that, you know, is getting up there, not in age, but he's getting to, you know, he's not getting any younger and he's playing at an elite level and he obviously wants to cash that in. You know, there'd be a lot of teams that are in win now mode that would pay a fortune to Trey Hendrickson to give him, you know, potentially push him over the edge. And he knows that. And if a team was to come in and offer the Bengals something and he was to go elsewhere, they'd probably extend him for a couple of years. He'd probably be very happy and it'd be far more money than he's earning here. You know, all it takes for Trey Hendrickson in training camp is to him to tear his ACL. Was a guy that's getting older, has played a lot of snaps throughout his career, and his value as a free agent, as DJ Reader found out, will diminish significantly. So you can understand completely why he's trying to do that. We'd all do it if we were in our places of work and there was, you know, talk about getting more money elsewhere rather than just putting your body on the line for someone that you don't believe is paying you what you believe you're worth at market rate. It's a very frustrating as a fan in some ways part of the NFL because there's not much you can do about it as a fan, and you kind of always feel like, well, these players earn enough, you know, why do they need any more? But yeah, I get it from where Trey's coming from, and like I said before, it does ever so slightly worry me, the longer term narrative here from the Bengals, and also internally what people are saying, you know, other players within the locker room, there'll be a degree of frustration from Trey's part, there'll be a degree of frustration from T. Higgins' part. Is he in Jamar Chase's ear saying, look, you know, I don't know what the Bengals are doing here, why they're not paying me? Is Jamar Chase annoyed with the Bengals because they're not paying his you know, his top buddy in the locker room, T. Higgins? You know, there's just a few things there long term that might you know, you hope the cracks don't turn into anything more significant.
Yes, and just on Jamar Chase, they exercised his fifth-year option, so give them a bit more wiggle room to negotiate a deal there. But you're right, but equally on the Bengals side, you're kind of thinking, well, you know, we've got this guy for a bit of a bargain here, and we're quite pleased with that, and why shouldn't we be? You know, it's... but yeah, I guess I wonder if they could give him a little bit more money. It's not in the Bengals' habits to do that, but anyway, watch their space when it comes to that situation, I think. Right, we've got some before we get to your correspondence, actually, we need to mention that the registration is open for our trip over to Cincinnati in the fall, in the autumn. Just go on to touchdowntrips.com/BengalsUK. How about that? Nice and easy. touchdowntrips.com/BengalsUK. And you can go on there and register your interest. Absolutely no obligation at all. It just means that you'll get sort of messages first and foremost once we choose the fixture and sort out all the dates and all the rest of it. So do go on if you're interested. I think it's safe to say that they've been quite life-changing trips, the two of them, and that's not overstating it either. They've been really great. So hopefully this year will be equally as great. So do go on to register your interest there. Right, let's get to your correspondences. Subscribe, hit that bell, you see. Share this vibe with you and me. Comment below, let's start a spree. I wanna grow this cast with company. Subscribe, boost that energy. I need your clicks to feel the buzz. Oh, please. Cincinnati. Paris Penny at Paris Penny. As time goes on, I love this draft class more and more. Obviously, there's a large element of risk with some of the picks they've made. It's certainly a go big or go home draft, but I like the fact they've gone for it and not played it safe. Now, that's an interesting point, isn't it? Because Duke, you know, is often accused of being too safe. And this time, I don't know what he's been drinking. RIP, by the way, and condolences to the Tobin family, because Duke's dad, Bill, a long-time legendary NFL executive, passed away last week, just before the draft. Rotten timing for everyone, really. And I know that Bill was really loved within the Bengals organization and had a fantastic career. So we also send our condolences to the Tobin family. But... Duke decided to really go for it a bit this year, didn't he?
No, absolutely. And I think you said it before, the Bengals have been a little bit risk adverse in the past. He's gone for the high ceilings. Does the risk translate to winning now, though? I mean, are these players going to be able to just come in, you know, because they have higher ceilings and perform straight away? I think there's questions about that. And maybe that's why with the 10 picks, they've probably thought to themselves, do you know what? We can see in training camp what these guys are like. They're not all going to make the roster, and we're okay with that. But if Tanner McLaughlin rocks up and, you know, looks like George Kittle on day one, then great, he'll make the roster. Maybe Eric Hall, maybe they say, look, sod it, he wasn't what we thought. You know, he's, you know, perhaps hasn't recovered from these injuries. We might be a bit risky there and just say, all right, yes, he's a fourth round pick. We're going to put him on the practice squad. If someone takes him, fair enough. You know, so, yeah, interesting. And like you said before, if any of these guys, you get the ceiling out of them, then, you know, it's exciting, isn't it? So, fingers crossed.
Peter Dadswell at Dadders, just based on the interviews of him, I suspect that many fans' favourite pick will turn out to be Chris Jenkins. Absolutely. The mutant looks like really good fun. I love the fact that he was like meeting the Blackburn family and just sort of just embraced Katie to her surprise, actually. Anyway, watch out for him. I think he's going to be really good fun in the locker room. Jamie at Trequart Beaster. Nearly every team gets better from the draft and we're no different. I wish we had gone in a different direction with a few, but we'll see what it turns into. Exactly. John Kelly at JK_NIBengal68. A solid B+ from me. I was Team Mims from the start, although did start edging towards Murphy as he could make an immediate impact. KJ seems like he's going to be a great fit, but I'm slightly disappointed we didn't trade up for JN, as in Johnny Newton. The Bengals, I think Jeff Hobson wrote a piece saying that they did consider trading up for Johnny Newton, but regarded the 10-place jump just too much. And a lot of people will counter that by saying, well, why the hell not? We could have done something if we were a bit bolder. Anyway, John goes on to say, if we'd gotten AM, Merris Mims, and Johnny Newton with our first two picks, it's an A. Agreed. Martin at Dorset Bengal. Hello, Martin. Let's hope the risks pay off, or the season may go for a Burton. I'll get me coat. Most excited for Jenkins, I think. Seems like a decent bloke too, definitely. Yash at It's Yash 98. Hello, Yash. B- as I like the centre, DT and wide receiver picks. Would have liked another pass rusher, and I think we drafted one tight end too many. My favourite pick is Jenkins. We're a better team, but I hope we have our pass rush and run defence in check. Chris Roberts at 1066. Chris, we were often picking at the end of a run, which meant we have taken picks with risk. Was surprised we didn't move up. Overall, a B grade, which could rise to an A if they hit their ceiling. Loving Chris Jenkins, do we really need a second tight end and a DB more than running back and guard? And make some really good points there about, especially at the end of the runs, when you see your players go off the board, you're kind of stuck in a bit of a tricky situation, aren't you, really? But yeah, no running back, no interior offensive lineman until very late on. But yeah, good points from Chris there.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't think at all, like I said this before the draft, that they needed a running back. I think that was one of those positions I just didn't feel the need for the depth there. I'm quite happy with what they've got with Travion Williams as a running back three. They gave him an extension for a reason. And the two guys, Moss and Chase Brown, very happy with them. I think that's a really smart move from them, not trying to be too clever and wasting a pick in the sort of third, fourth round. Also not the best running back class I've ever seen in terms of prospects. So I think that's a smart move from them. On the offensive interior, yeah, that's a fair point. I think that probably could have been addressed instead of the two tight ends. But yeah.
UK Wincinnati fan at Bengal 90. Taking Matt Lee with the final pick has an unreasonably high emotional swing effect on me. Went from screaming in frustration at the lack of interior offensive line depth to pretty stoked about it going forwards. We've never had an offensive line with even average pass blocking stats. That should change. Yeah, I think a lot of people would echo that. They were sort of heading hands a little bit. But with Matt Lee being drafted right at the back end there, there's hope for all you all you fans of big beefy lads on the offensive line. Showtime. And I must say, Ted Karras today in the locker room. Again, Ted Karras, how brilliant is he? How lucky are we to have a bloke like Ted Karras on our team? He's so warm and open. And he said, you know, they took Mims out for dinner and he can't wait to get going with those guys. And it's exactly the kind of open, welcoming, collaborative sort of, you know, approach that you want from your guys, right?
100%.
Showtime at Barclay 970. Favorite picks: Mims, Jenkins, Burton, All, Lee. Least favorite: Dejan Anthony. Are we better? Yes. We did good in free agency and now drafting guys who have a massive ceiling if they perform. Out of the 10 picks, 8 could be in the 55 at some point this season, I believe. Burton was a steal. Yeah, I'm not sure about a steal. I think, again, just judging on some of the big boards that I was using and the mock drafts that I saw and blah, 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 he was a bit of a third round. So we got him in the third round. So I don't know. But I see what your point. He could be a steal. Let's put it that way. I mean, he's got all the talent in the world, isn't he? And finally, Sam Reeve at Johnny Prong.
Solid handle.
Chris Jenkins looks like a solid bloke and comes across really well in pieces and social media. Good feeling about Mims as well and the wide receiver Burton. Thank you, Sam. And I'm a bit freaked out because I actually work with a bloke called Chris Jenkins. So all this kind of praise on Chris Jenkins, I kind of think about my work friend, Chris. So I'm not quite so complimentary about him. But anyway... there you go. Thank you very much for listening. Another draft in the books. Any sort of parting shots there, Nathan? Any concluding remarks that you'd like to throw in there?
No, not really. I think overall it's a fairly solid draft. I said it at the start. I wish they'd moved around a bit and been a little bit more aggressive with the capital they've got and tried to go into that sort of win now mode. The injury side of things worries me a little bit, even including what they did in free agency. You know, I think you've got to take risks. There's players that have got injury concerns that never turn out to be anything too much, and actually you get some great value there. So intriguing. I think every team around the NFL at the moment, barring the Falcons perhaps, like I said, are sitting there thinking, we've got a lot better, we're going to be really good, we've got an incredible stash of players, can't wait to see them all, give me their jerseys now. And there's a degree of soberness that needs to be taken with the draft. You know, a lot of these guys won't make the roster. A lot of these guys may not ever, you know, contribute like we think they might. You know, you look back in the years gone by about players we've been excited about that just haven't been able to step up. You know, when we drafted Jackson Carman, people were sort of like, oh, yeah, this guy could be good. Oh, I've read some good things here. And you look at that, Zach Carter's a guy that really hasn't come along like we thought. There's a lot there, and I think we just need to take a sort of deep breath. I'm happy overall with the class. I like Mims. I think he's a really good player to have on there at 18. They didn't overcomplicate it, filled a position of need. If he can, like we said earlier, match anything like what his physical traits show, then we would have got an enormously good value pick there. So yeah, overall content is probably exactly my summary of it.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know what to think about this draft class. But we wish them well. Absolutely wish them well. I can't wait to see what they can contribute to the team. But, you know, to be fair, if you took the emotion out of it and kind of, you know, your skin in the game, if you like, they did address all the positions pretty much of immediate need. Would I have liked a cornerback a bit higher? Yes. Would I, you know, I'm happy that they double dipped at defensive tackle. I'm really happy that they did actually. They took advantage of the historic top end offensive tackle class. So, you know, they have checked some boxes here. It's just there's a lot of variables. It's everything's a bit risky. Each pick, you know, you go back and forth on. So you just hope that these guys have a great career because it will be great for us and great for them. So we wish them well. We're hoping at some point in the very near future to speak to one of these draft picks. So stand by your beds for that. Do remember, if you're interested in coming with us to Cincinnati this year, that the registration is now open. And I believe, actually, you know what, the fixture list will be released in a couple of weeks' time. So we should be able to, you know, by the end of, well, sort of middle of May time, we should be able to kind of, you know, or at least the end of May, that's probably safer to say, we should be all systems go, and we can sort of, we'll have earmarked which fixture that we quite fancy, and we'll be able to share more news. But do go and register, no obligation, as we say. We'll be back next week chatting more about the draft moving forward. And but yeah, I want to say thank you, actually, as ever, for the draft. A lot of work goes into draft coverage, so huge thanks to Andrew Dockrell for doing all his mock drafts. Huge thanks to all the guys that contributed to Good Morning Bengals. A huge thank you to all our guests on Cincinnati leading up to draft weekend, and that includes Sam Monson from PFF, the British Bengals draft panel of Peter Dadswell, Nathan Sangara, Paris Pinney,
Rory Joe Daniels.
They were fantastic. And of course, Joe Goodbury. Thanks to Jamie for manning the Twitter lines over the weekend when old bugger here was in bed sleeping soundly. And thank you very much for you. I hope we did a good job again. And thank you very much for listening and watching and interacting. It's been another fun weekend. With all that being said, it's time for me to get out of here and enjoy the delights of this rather seedy central London hotel. And I will say a hoo day from me.
And a hoo day from me. Cheers, guys.
And it should also be noted that the views and opinions expressed within this podcast do not reflect those of the Cincinnati Bengals organization.